This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks very much, Mike, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to first of all start off by thanking the 1994 Group and Neil Stewart Associates for organising this important event once again, and indeed for taking the opportunity to invite me. It's of course been an extraordinary few weeks for higher education, and there are some more extraordinary weeks yet to come. Of course, yesterday in London, there was a significant march by a large number of students that came to protest peacefully against the cuts that they have announced. And we still believe that the extent of the cuts will cause immeasurable damage to our sector and to other areas we rely on, like further education and welfare. I feel I have to take this opportunity to comment briefly on events that took place at the end of yesterday's demonstration. As I said in the media, we at NUS are deeply dismayed by the actions of a small minority of those 50,000 people who attended, and we did everything we could to organise a peaceful and responsible action, but sadly it was hijacked. But we must move forward, and that will be the thrust of my speech here today. In the weeks and months to come, a vote on the fee cap, a white paper, measures to change the student support package, and ultimately a full-scale higher education bill. I expect that some of what I have to say today, some colleagues may find surprising and perhaps even shocking, but I have no doubt that it needs to be said, as I fear that the sector is unprepared for the consequences of the government's recent decisions in terms of the relationship between students and institutions. We have not arrived here out of the blue. First, we have the Brown Report. At 65 pages, it has been noted for its brevity compared to previous great inquiries into higher education by Lord Robbins and Lord Deering. But where those reports both sought to advise the government on the day on how to use its fund to support the development of higher education and steer strategy for the sector, Brown's advice is largely focused on the principle that the government should get out of higher education as much as possible. Completely silent on the questions of what the size, shape, and structure of higher education should be in the future, it instead proposes to leave such questions to the invisible hand of the market. Almost all funding for teaching would be channeled, as it is said, through the student in the form of unlimited fees. The only direct public funding would be for high-cost and strategically important subjects. Since then, we have heard statements from ministers about the government's intentions. Their response has been to adopt the general thrust of Brown's proposals as its policy. So we expect the main hefty teaching grant to decrease from £3.5 billion a year to just £700 million a year, whilst fees increase from £3,300 up to £9,000 a year. This is, of course, in direct contravention of pledges made to students and their families during the general election. I will not dwell on the politics today, but it is worth saying that I've heard every excuse under the sun from some Liberal Democrat MPs about how they didn't win the election and can't implement everything, I nearly said anything, in their manifesto. Not good enough. For a start, occupying ministerial posts is normally something that the winners in an election enjoy. Promises made to us were specific, explicit, entirely individual and unambiguous. We will hold to account any MP who breaks their promises, especially those whose soaring ambitions for a new kind of politics now seem very hollow indeed. To be completely fair, I also want to take the opportunity to thank those MPs who have stuck to their principles and their promises and intend to defy the government when the vote is called. We won't forget that they were there for us when others abandoned us. We expect that the vote will take place before the Christmas recess. But that in itself raises huge procedural questions, as Parliament will be asked to authorise a higher fee cap before the government has even published its wider strategy for higher education in the form of a white paper, and without any guarantee of the much vaunted progressive repayment system actually coming into being. They have promised it will be, but I think we can be forgiven for taking promises made by politicians with a pinch of salt. So firstly today, I want to make a demand that ministers should find easy to accede to. it should be guaranteed in primary legislation that the threshold for loan repayments must be increased to £21,000 and thereafter with earnings growth, and that the repayment rate, currently 9%, must never be increased. This is not just a symbolic matter. I am gravely concerned that if the government's predictions about average fee levels are wrong and the cost of the loan system spirals out of control, progressive repayments will go straight out of the window. If ministers want us to believe that they are serious about this, they should protect future students by putting the whole repayment system into the statute book. Inevitably, issues like the fee level and the repayment terms for student loans are at the political sharp end. But Stefan Collini, whose recent review of the Brown Review must be recognised as its most compelling critique, was right to say that this concentration on the amount graduates might pay and on which social groups might gain or lose by comparison with the present system, in some significant respects, has missed the point. Indeed, Brown's recommendations for repayments are, within their own terms, more progressive than the current arrangements, which is why we must have a cast iron guarantee that they will be delivered and maintained in the future. But Professor Collini, along with many other people, raises more fundamental questions. And let me raise some of my own. According to the government, the state is to have no direct involvement in the funding of arts, humanities and social science at the higher level. It is hard to see how this will not lead to a recession in those subjects in modern universities and instability elsewhere. According to the data I have seen, there are 25 institutions in England that will lose all of their recurrent teaching funding. 10 of those are here in London. They include some of our country's most important small and specialist institutions, such as Heythrop College, the Central School of Speech and Drama, the Music and Dance Conservatoire at Trinity-Laban, and the Courtauld Institute. Elsewhere, they include institutions bringing opportunities to study arts and humanities to disadvantaged local communities, such as Newman University College in Birmingham and Leeds Trinity University College. Brown's proposals will threaten these fantastic institutions, narrowing student choice and wasting years of hard work and the talents of their staff. More broadly, the idea that the state has no interest in the arts or humanities or social sciences is philistine and lamentable. With only a few exceptions, the deafening silence from vice-chancellors to argue the case for these subjects to receive public funding has been a deep disappointment. The attitude seems to have prevailed that as long as the sector gets more money from somewhere, it doesn't matter. I will argue very strongly that it does matter, and it will have serious consequences for the very nature of the student experience. It turns on the role of the market. The proposed structures may be progressive in terms of the repayment terms, but they remain deeply regressive in one very important respect. As we argued in our critique of markets in higher education published 2 years ago, the purpose of markets everywhere is to create winners and losers. It is possible that some modern universities will keep their prices low, perhaps at around £6,000. But more likely, they keep their prices high and cut the numbers of places on offer, which will open out the market for further education colleges and new entrants to move in. Either way, students from backgrounds of social disadvantage will have far more money spent on them than students... students from backgrounds of social advantage will have far more money spent on them than students from disadvantaged backgrounds. Divisions of prestige and regard will grow even wider than they are today. Overall participation in higher education may well increase in the longer term, but vast differences in quality across the range will emerge. Brown's model prefers to channel funds to a small number of world-class institutions, largely populated by students from highly advantaged social backgrounds, to a system where we have strength and depth and where higher education of all kinds contributes to social progress. And for what? What specific advantages will this strategy, if you can call it that, bring us? It will not directly empower students, the vast majority of whom will remain immobile once in the market. Price will come in like a sledgehammer and dominate the decision-making process, pushing out many other crucial factors. It is doubtful that the provision of information, advice and guidance will be improved quickly enough. Indeed, Michael Gove recently, who has already been keen to distance himself from suggesting that he has the funding to implement much of the needed reforms. And even if they are implemented, they will be insufficient to compete with such a powerful signal about quality, however inaccurate. Will it force change in institutional practices? Certainly not in more established institutions. It will more likely force modern institutions to simply discontinue provision in areas of weakness or perceived weakness, rather than creating any serious positive change. A short-term future of panic mergers and ruthless departmental closures. A long-term future with an even less coherent pattern of provision. Hundreds of providers, all competing in a pool of decreasing size. Confusion and a poor service for applicants, students and employers alike. If it leads to a sustainable future where quality for all, not just the lucky few, just gets better and better, I'll eat my hat. Finally, this market totalitarianism will utterly and irreversibly transform the relationship between institutions and students. It is on this dimension that I will attempt to give a distinct and perhaps unexpected take on the implications of our present direction of travel. Some of you will know that before becoming president of NUS, I was its vice president for higher education. In that capacity, I was heavily involved for 2 years in work around quality, the recognition of achievement, improving admissions, student support and employability. I always did so in the spirit and indeed a practice of partnership with colleagues within institutions and the sector's national bodies. We made much progress and thought we could make a difference. I am sorry to say this, but I have reflected on this carefully and must give my honest view now. The approach we have taken in the past and today is no longer fit for purpose in the proposed new landscape. I hate to use clichés, but there is a point at which I have to say that universities cannot both have their cake and eat it. If students are to pay hugely increased fees, then they must have increased rights and increased power. Some of that will come through market forces, but we must recognise that higher education is necessarily going to be a very different kind of market to that which operates in other sectors. We will have to plan and prepare for that, carefully but urgently. I don't like to say this, but it will require us to rethink some of the things that have until now been successful and well-regarded systems for making sure that our higher education system is the best it can be. And I'm going to be clear and direct about what I think this means. We cannot seriously believe that the present system of quality, the present quality assurance model is sufficient to deal with the cut and thrust of the new market. It is too vague, too slow, and too distant from the student. I believe a firmer and more direct approach to quality monitoring should be taken, and I think that the QAA should have a totally changed structure and remit. The OIA should remain as an independent complaints body, but we should examine the possibility of creating a networked ombudsman with a presence on every campus to make the process more immediate and accessible to students. I also want a watchdog that will take a proactive view on market practice in the sector and review institutional practices and the development of the market, with a power to refer matters to the OFT or Competition Commission if there is cause for concern, ranging from high-level action, such as the prevention of collusion on price, to examining prospectuses and others advertising for accuracy and fairness in what they represent and promise. There will be desperate need for this form of scrutiny. I don't want national bodies telling universities what they should teach or how. That would cause even more damage compared to what will be done by the new fee regime. but I do want an independent organisation giving students and applicants an independent opinion on the quality of what's on offer in institutions and their relative strengths and weaknesses. That doesn't necessarily have to be a creature of government, but it has to happen, and it has to be in place from the start. There are some specifics which are very important. I want serious penalties for failing to make progress on widening participation, and hard targets, not soft benchmarks. And this isn't just about people not applying, it's about who makes it and who doesn't. I frankly expect access agreements and whatever comes in their place to only be authorised if they make serious commitments and set targets on admissions and retention that we can measure and monitor. Back in 2006, when the existing structures were put in place, we were told that institutions would be subject to strict new criteria. And today, most have failed to make any substantial progress. I have no confidence progress will be made on tackling the sector's serious access and demographic problems unless a tougher regime is put in place. Students should also have the legal right to leave an institution and move institutions after the first year if they have been misled by the market. I want hidden costs and secondary charges necessary for an average student to learn effectively, from bench fees to charges for printing in the library, banned outright. If a fee of £9,000 a year isn't all-inclusive, something is badly wrong. We are working with the sector to develop new guidance on student charters, and we will continue that work. But that guidance must now set out quite specific and strong requirements on how charters would be designed and put into use with enforceable minimum standards. And all of this should be underpinned by new guarantees on supporting student representation and advocacy at the institutional level. These new regulatory bodies should have real teeth. It is a basic principle of good regulation that regulators should not be involved in funding matters, so we must separate completely the funding body from whatever pittance of public funding that remains from the regulatory and scrutiny processes. There can be no more airy talk of using funding levers, which will be consigned to the past. Brown ushers in the era of sticks, not carrots. Institutions must be required to repay fees to students where there is poor quality in delivery or promises not kept. They must face genuine penalties where malpractice and misadministration occur. It is not enough to have no answer to this. I think the governance arrangements for all of these structures must be built on the principle of independence with strong user involvement. In fact, the idea of a principle part of the accountability machinery being sector-owned has had its day as far as I'm concerned. Do the water companies own Ofwat? Do the broadcasters own Ofcom? Of course they don't, and it would be absurd if they did. It needs a total direction change. It is regrettable that you should be the ones who have to hear this at first hand. Many of you I have called colleagues and indeed friends, and many of you have worked extremely hard for many years to build a consensus-based approach to quality and accountability. But the reality is that Brown and the government aim to open up higher education to new providers who share none of those traditions, and this will require a complete change in approach. It will mean a complete change of approach for student organisations as well. And I don't underestimate the challenge of that now. But now more than ever, we have to be bold and understand that there is more than one way to be radical and fight in your members' interests. We look forward to developing specific proposals in these areas for the government's white paper, and we expect ministers to support the view that a strongly market-led approach requires proportionate but truly independent and responsive structures for accountability. Let me sum up. I take no pleasure in delivering this message. Indeed, I do so with a heavy heart and a taste of bitterness in my mouth, given all I believe about the role and process of higher learning. I wish I could have come here and made the case for a different vision of higher education. I cannot stress how much I will continue to fight for that alternative vision as I have been doing, and I don't take all of those students into account for yesterday. But we are running out of time. And if the government's plans become a reality, with the key decisions to drive those plans forward probably just weeks away, then we will also have run out of options. Nobody has tried harder than me to prevent this market scenario from happening, but it may well happen, and I do not intend to let my members down if it does. I will not stand by and let their interests fall into second place behind old-fashioned thinking and approaches no longer fit for purpose in that world. If we face into the cold and unforgiving winds of a substantially free market, I will not allow students to be let down by weak regulation, permissive of misbehaviour and unfair practice. In short, if that crucial vote goes through, I will be seeking the necessary policies, structures and other reforms to bring about a consumer revolution in higher education. It is deeply unpleasant, but I've taken the view that if the market is to so reign over higher education, then nothing else will do. Thank you for your time.